Custom Car Care.
All right. Good morning and welcome. You've got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. The weather's a-changing, Sarah.
It is. Thankfully, we haven't had anything too dramatic.
Not
but
yet.
It sounds like, I think they were reporting either Tuesday or Wednesday, mm-hmm. we could start to see some real winter weather.
So I heard that, which this is a little bit of a spectrum, so I guess it depends on where you live.
Uh-huh.
But KY3, I think yesterday, talked from 1 to 17 inches was the possible.
They're not taking any
chances,
are they?
They're going to cover the gamut over there. So we haven't had a big snow as of yet this year.
Yeah.
We've had some flurries and, you know, a little bit things going on. But for the most part, we've had a very mild year. We may be paying for it before the winter comes to end, I suppose.
Yeah, whenever we checked our persimmons, I believe mm-hmm. it was, what, a spoon?
Yep, so, we definitely had some snow, according to the persimmons, in the forecast.
That's right. So maybe we're going to be experiencing some of that. Now, I'm a little bit further north than you are, mm-hmm. so I feel like I get a little bit more snow and just kind of weather precipitation anyways.
I think you guys do, for sure.
Yeah.
Have you ever shoveled snow for money as a kid?
I don't think so, but we lived out in the country.
Oh, that's right. That's
and
right.
So it was one of those things that whenever you live out in the country and it's snowing and icing, you have either one, people who just push through it and they're mm-hmm. like, we're going to work.
That's
no matter,
right.
They're like the postal service.
Yeah.
But then you also have the people that kind of just shut in, mm-hmm. you know, make sure that you got your bread and your milk and eggs and
all your staples.
Set. Yep. So my parents were always the kind that had the bread, milk,
uh-huh.
and the eggs. So whenever it snowed, we were always just kind of snowed in. And we lived on kind of a crappy road,
yeah.
too. There's no other way to put it. We had one big hill one
Ooh.
Way, another big hill the other way, and then an S curve at the bottom
Oof.
Of it. So
yeah.
it's one of those roads that you just never risked it.
Better safe than
yeah.
sorry. We lived rural when we moved back here. But when I lived probably from about 5 until maybe I was maybe 12 or so, we lived up north on the east side of Lake Michigan, kind of the southeast side. And we lived in town. And so that was a huge deal for us. A, we didn't get a ton of snow days, but when we did, it was a lot of snow. And so I would go out and I would shovel snow for all the people that would pay me to do it.
There you go.
And I finally worked up enough either paper out money or shoveling snow money that I bought my own snow blower when I was probably 10.
Nice.
And it worked out really good. This is all kind of a pastime or maybe something that doesn't happen too much here in Southwest Missouri, but you know, when it does happen, I mean, that's a good thing for kids if you'll, you know, put the video game controller down and get out there and shovel the old snow. But the snowblower, I remember it was a Toro, and it was a slightly used model. It was not a new one, but that really increased my ability and work load, if you will, not to be shoveling it, to be able to use my snowblower. So just kind of a thought out there. You know, here in Missouri, we don't really have a big need for snowblowers or plows or anything like that, except when we do, you know, because here in Missouri we got all the weather. So it's just something to think about, something I'm doing a little preparation for and have been. I have done our snow removal for our shops for quite a while now, and I typically do it with a four-wheeler, and I think it is a 4-foot Warren snow blade, and it does a really good job. It truly does. We've had some pretty decent snows, and the old four-wheeler, I've taken pretty good care of it over the years. It is a 500cc Honda Foreman Rubicon Rancher or something. I don't know. It's a rancher, I guess, is what it would be. But this thing has been a great machine. I've tried to take good care of it, and I do our snow removal, and so I'm trying to upgrade my skill set a little bit and go to a heated cab pickup. We'll see whether I get that done, because that is the only or the biggest drawback about doing it with a four-wheeler is, oh my goodness, sometimes it is very cold to be out there pushing snow.
Ooh, so I can imagine.
My whole lead up for that is we need to be careful because it's been so mild here. You know, we're looking into 2024 at this point, and we really haven't had a lot of freezing temperatures or precipitation on top of freezing temperatures. What does that mean to you guys out there, and why in the world did I birdwalk through that story with all of you? It's mainly to get your attention to say, hey, the seasons are changing pretty good right now, and whatever your weakest link is going to show itself as we go from one extreme to the other. Now, I don't mean that we've been in an extreme, but the mild weather allows all your mechanical and even lack thereof mechanical, your water lines, etc., to not have to work as hard. So what's going to happen is we get some freezing temperatures coming in for days on end, and we're not getting above freezing at some point. We haven't really seen that during the day for days on end. And then we tie some freezing precipitation on top of all that. You're going to find whatever it is that hasn't been cared for, maintenance, or has been essentially neglected, or just worn out, because that happens as well. I mean, maintenance is an amazing thing, but essentially there is a lifespan of most items out there. So my point with this whole deal is, unfortunately, we're getting ready to stress test all of our equipment, whether it's your automobiles, your home, any of your infrastructure at work, or whatever the case may be. We're going to find out whatever the weak link is. A lot of times your battery shows itself, and I know that's kind of low-hanging fruit here, but it stresses big time through the high temperatures of summer. But typically we see a tremendous amount of battery failures at this point in time. And we're doing a lot of battery replacements. I heard some of the big box parts stores touting that they will do free battery testing or free replacement. And, you know, from a shop standpoint, I used to kind of get, how do I say this? I used to get upset about that a little bit, because I'm like, you know, you're in the business of selling parts. You're not really training your folks with these new computer-controlled charging systems, and you're sending them out there to change batteries. And I just thought that was a really bad recipe for disaster, and I didn't really think it was the place of the parts store, who's in the business of selling parts, to start doing repair work in that instance. But what I have found over the years is I'm no longer really upset about that, because I have so much work that is sent to the shops because one of the parts stores doesn't do it correctly, and they damage the components that, you know, unfortunately, we end up with the business anyway, or fortunately, I don't mean unfortunately, but I mean unfortunately in the stance that, you know, if you're going to trust somebody to do service work on your car, they should be qualified and trained to do it, whether you take it to A1 Custom Car Care or not. If you have somebody that's good, I don't care where they work at, you know, if they're at an independent shop, they're at a dealer, etc., you need to have somebody that knows the system. Because the battery situation in cars is not what it was 10 and 15 years ago. 10 and 15 years ago, it was a very simple charging system. It was typically located in a space in the vehicle that was very accessible, and I see why they would throw batteries in at no charge or without testing or doing the correct repair process or exchange procedure. But now, a lot of times, I need to make sure that you have a supplemental power source to keep the learned adaptives, not just your learned presets of your radio, but your idle, your shift points in the transmission. There are certain things that that vehicle is used to and has learned over time. And a lot of times, if you have somebody A that doesn't know what they're doing and changes the battery, even if they have capacitors in there, which will store voltage for a little while, or current, if you will, I've seen them plenty of times short out the system. I've seen them arc across that. I saw it actually this last week with somebody who didn't really know what they were doing, jumpstarting a car, create a lot more electrical problems because they were not up to date, if you will, on what it takes to even do a simple battery change. And a lot of times it's not as simple as you think anymore. Most late model vehicles require a scan tool to let the powertrain control module or the electrical monitoring systems on that vehicle know that you installed a new battery in there and it will adjust the charge rate accordingly. And if you don't do those processes correctly, it overcharges the new battery and typically kills the battery in the system in there. So be mindful, I guess, as we wrap up this first segment, of who and how and why they're doing any kind of service, battery or otherwise, to make sure that they don't create you more problems than you had before you even made it there. But Sarah and I are going to step into a break. We're going to pick it up right on the other side.
Your complete car care solution, A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back, Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. You got some stories.
I do.
What do you got over
there? Okay, so I got tons of recalls. I also have an end-of-year report for sales, and I have a EV story. So let me know what you want to hear first.
Well, let's talk about that end-of-year sales. That one interests me quite a bit.
All right, so this is from Fox Business. Ford U.S. new vehicle sales climb at 7.1%, highest since 2020. Mm-hmm. So that sales figure marked a 7.1 increase from 2022 when the automaker posted 1.86 million in U.S. sales. Now, Ford, they touted that sales performance of its F-Series trucks, which saw a year-over-year jump of 15% in 2023. Yeah. Do you see a lot of those in the shop?
Oh, yeah. We do quite a bit. Everybody knows that I'm kind of a Ford junkie, if you will. And I notice a lot of folks, you know, KSGF listeners have a lot of Ford products out there. And when they find somebody that really, you know, kind of enjoys working on those chassis and whatnot and really has devoted a lot of time at being really good at those platforms. And this isn't just me, by the way. My guys are fantastic out there. It really makes a big difference with somebody that intimately knows those systems versus somebody that just works, you know, on whatever and has to kind of learn as you go along with it, right, if that makes any sense.
So 750,800 F-Series trucks were sold last year.
I believe it.
It's a lot of trucks
out there.
Now, the F-Series, it just celebrated its 47th year in a row as America's best-selling truck, in addition to its 42nd as the best-selling vehicle of all time.
Wow, that's impressive.
Next on that list,
okay,
Ford says that hybrid vehicle sales were up 25% of the year, and in the fourth quarter, it sold 37,229 hybrids. Now, I think the reason that it is up 25% is because there has been such a push to kind of move to all electric, and hybrid, it kind of seems to be kind of an in the middle vehicle.
It makes more sense to me, honestly, that, you know, regardless of where you're at charging station wise, that you can run into a regular petrol station and, you know, juice back up, if you will, and keep going and not have to worry about the hybrid or the EV, just sheer electric side of the world. As well as inventory's got to be helping this. I don't know if you've seen any dealerships lately, but they're definitely having the inventory finally. And I'm sure even with the interest rates hiking up, that folks are glad to be able to go pick something out and buy it.
It's funny that you say that. I was heading down to Galena. So we stopped through Crane and they have
Hamilton.
It's a Ford dealership.
It's a great dealership.
And the last time we were down there, we go down there typically like once a year for an extended family Christmas. And the year before, there was just maybe five or six vehicles on the lot. It was bare. And this year when we were down there, it was completely full. And I was like, well, look at that. So yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that.
I'm seeing it with, you know, maybe not all makes, all models, but it's sure building up out there to where people actually have some choices, and it's swinging from a seller's market to a buyer's market, which it's needed to, because the buyers have been taking it in the shorts on a lot of this stuff.
Right. Now, here's what it says about their EV sales. They sold 72,608 electric vehicles in 2023. That is an 18% increase from the prior year. And Ford said its F-150 Lightning and their Mustang Mach-E contributed to that growth, with the latter having its best year of sales since the vehicles launch in 2021. And Ford says they remain the second most popular seller of EVs in the U.S. behind Tesla. Now, Ford's reporting of its 2023 U.S. sales follows General Motors and Toyota's doing so earlier in this week, with the former selling 2.6 million and the latter selling 2.2 million. It also comes about a month ahead of when the automaker is expected to release its fourth quarter results. So there you have it.
So I find that interesting that they've, you know, touted that they're growing the EV side of it. However, there's some other news articles out there showing that Ford has announced that they're cutting a lot of their Mach-E and their Lightning truck.
I have seen that. In fact, didn't we cover that? Or I don't know if we covered it or if we talked about it off air, but I know that we had a conversation.
I believe we have had it on air here. So it's, you know, one of those deals. Again, I hate to just beat the dead horse and be the like gloom and doom EV guy. I'm not opposed to it. Can I work on them and fix them? Yeah. I mean, that's what we do. Most of that stuff's under warranty, so we're not doing that as of this point. But in the next probably 3 to 5 years, those will start falling out of warranty, and that's something we'll be servicing. My point of this whole deal and my contention is that the technology is still not there. And my proof in the pudding there is if you look at the used EV market, even Tesla, and there's a lot of great things going on with that company, even Tesla, the used market, you talk about depreciation, holy cow, you almost have to pay somebody, and I'm being a little bit dramatic here, to take a used EV off your hands because quote-unquote repower, which is what I've talked about quite a bit of time, that a lot of times we are repowering or putting a new powertrain in an old combustion vehicle chassis. The repower on a EV with the batteries and the electric motors is big money. Sometimes it's half or more of the initial brand new value of the car. So it just doesn't make any sense. I can't see doing that in 5 years, having a $18,000 battery replacement in a vehicle. I don't know. Am I being crazy over here, sir?
I would definitely not want to be in that situation.
No. You're footing the bill to be the guinea pig, if you will, for these manufacturers to quote unquote sell their EV stuff, and you're on the hook for all the repairs. So.
Right. And EVs, I do want to mention this, EVs are not a brand new thing. Now, they've been really in the news probably the last 2 or 3 years, they've been around for, what, over a decade?
Oh, there's even some back into the early 1900s
had.
Yeah, like when the Model A came out, you know, there was some competitors that were putting it out there, and there's some footage, especially in the New York area, where they had electric vehicles back in the day. And the refined technology, the internal combustion engine at this point, and I'm not trying to hang on to dinosaur oil or whatever, but what I want to hang on to is my freedom and ability to go as I please.
And sustainability.
Yeah, that's absolutely a great point, is that it just doesn't make any sense that I'm going to have to sit there or I'm going to have to tote a gas-powered generator around. So if I do get stuck, I can charge myself back up. It's just the practicality of it is not there yet. And if it does get there at some point, well, great. I don't know if you've ever looked at those... I guess it'd be considered a EV bicycle, but the electric bikes, have you seen those at all? Mm-hmm. I think they're neat as can be. And would I want one and use one? Probably. That would be super awesome. And a lot of them even have some off-roading abilities. But that doesn't replace a standard bicycle for the fact that when that goes dead, you're walking.
That's right.
And so if I'm going to go somewhere that I'm potentially going to go dead with my EV or power bike, I'm going to take a regular bicycle so I can get myself back home. It just, you know, it's cool and we'll get there at some point, but we're not there yet. And I don't know about you all. If you got different feedback, definitely let us know. If you got an EV, I'd love to hear what you got to say about it. However, the technology isn't there mainstream for folks, nor is it especially there if you're doing towing. And I realize I tout the towing thing all the time, but that's an important thing in my life. And I guarantee there's some folks out there that are horse people, cattle people, boat people, and you get your Lightning F-150 and it makes it 53 miles. It's probably not going to be good enough to do what you need to do.
Yeah.
So that's just one of those things. Me, I'm more in the diesel side of things. I want power.
That's right.
Heck yeah. Full show.
Okay, real quick. Okay. I do have an EV story that I want to share with you.
Okay.
I know that it's going to be, It's going to be a conversation okay, starter for sure, but it's a longer story, so I'm going to save that for next segment. But in the meantime, Ford, they are recalling, since we are talking about Fords, they are recalling nearly 113,000 F-150 pickup trucks due to a rear axle issue. Have you heard this?
No, this is the new one on me.
The rear axle hub bolt may fatigue and break. So the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said the issue could lead to a heightened crash risk. Bolt breakage can cause axle hub spinal damage that could lead to the vehicle roll away when the vehicle is in park without the parking brake applied, or it can even cause a loss of drive power. Now, the NHTSA said that about 112,000 F-150s from 2021 through 2023 may be affected by this. And the impacted trucks have the trailer tow max duty package. So drivers, if that does sound like your vehicle, this is what you'll experience. They may hear a clicking noise if the rear axle bolt of their vehicle has become loose, or even a rattle noise if it has broken. Now, Ford, they have not learned of any crashes or injuries stemming from this rear axle hub bolt problem, and they are currently developing a solution for it. Mm-hmm. It says that if you do have one of these vehicles that is impacted by this recall, you could expect to see a letter in the mail with a little bit more information between January 29th and February 2nd. So if you do have one of those vehicles, make sure to keep your eye on the mail, because you'll probably be getting a letter here shortly.
Definitely. And then I think kind of reinforces some of the stuff we've talked about here on the show, is that park quality, even if it's new, is suffering. And for whatever reason, in today's climate, if you will, it's very difficult to get good, high quality parts.
Yeah.
Even when you're building them brand new and you're specking them out, they're using different vendors and manufacturers probably all over the world to make this stuff. And they do a huge run. And then again, this is, goes back to you as a consumer, unfortunately, beta test some of these new designs. And you end up figuring out that, hey, X, Y, and Z wasn't made up to snuff. And we got a problem. Now, thankfully, Ford has identified it. They're moving in. They're going to take care of it. But that's my big concern when you buy first generation XYZ car, truck, van, SUV, whatever, that if you buy the first, second generation, those are all the buggy ones, if you will, and you really need to hold out and be diligent as a consumer, not an emotional decision, and buy a good, refined product. But Sarah and I are down at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to 104.1 KSGF. We'll be right back after the break. A1 Custom Car Care. All right, welcome back. You got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Be prepared for winter weather.
No, that's
I'm just kidding. You had something else out there. You had some dirt on something.
I do. So this is Car and Driver. It's about EVs.
Okay.
The title is List of EVs Eligible for the $7,500 Federal Tax Credit Drastically Shrinks. Mm-hmm. Have you heard this already?
I have. I sure have. And I think that's a big reason why a lot of these manufacturers are dumping or pulling back on their EV programs.
Yes. So let me read through this, and we'll probably have a pretty good discussion after this. So despite the feeling that they've been around for more than a decade, they have, electric vehicles are still emerging technology. And because of that, most of them are still comparatively expensive when looking at similar gas-powered options. Now, to combat those prices as well as to spur the transition, the federal government has been subsidizing the production and sales of electric vehicles for over a decade. Since 2010, the federal incentives backed by the Internal Revenue Service, IRS, have included a $7,500 tax credit for EV buyers. Then, as those incentives started to dry up and manufacturers entered an arms race of sorts to retool factories and begin the rollout of electric vehicles, the Biden administration Inflation Reduction Act landed. Now, the list of cars eligible for the full $7,500 tax credit shrank to 14 unique models. And as of January 1st, 2024, that list has now dwindled to a meager for cars.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unlike those pre-2010 incentives, which were capped only by production numbers, the IRA consists of more stringent requirements. In addition to price caps and income limits, qualifying vehicles must be built in the U.S., Canada, or Mexico, have a battery capacity of at least 7.0 kilowatts or a GVWR under 14,000 pounds, and be produced by a manufacturer registered and approved by the IRS. So on top of those restrictions, at least 40% of the value of a battery's critical minerals must be extracted or processed in the United States or a country with which the United States has a free trade agreement, mm-hmm. or be recycled in North America, according to the U.S. Treasury.
Hmm.
Vehicles that meet the 40% mark earn a $3,700 tax credit. Vehicles that can meet a 5% or a 50% requirement earn a further $3,750 credit, bringing that total up to about $7,500. Hmm. As recently as 18 months ago, there were 14 EVs eligible for that full credit, many of them with multiple eligible trim levels. New restrictions have seen that number drop to only 4 vehicles currently in production, and 6 if we count the Chevy Bolt Twins that left production in 2023. As for qualifying models currently in production, there's the Ford F-150 Lightning, the Tesla Model 3, the Model X, and the Model Y. Though small, that list could grow in the coming weeks, according to a Reuters report. Volkswagen confirmed that it's in the process of confirming eligibility for the 2023 and 2024 ID4, and that same report confirms that Nissan is pursuing eligibility for the Leaf. GM, on the other hand, expects its portfolio to be included pending a sourcing change and will be providing customers with a $7,500 discount until cars become available.
Hmm.
So there you go.
Does that make you want to run out and buy one of those 4 models?
You know, it sure does not.
No, I don't think so either. You know, the kind of adverse side of this, and I think if we pay attention to history, and I'm not going to say that I'm a history buff by any means. However, I do realize that if we don't pay attention and learn from history, then we're bound to repeat the same bad decisions. But what I do see with history is when you start to try to limit your access or availability to certain things, typically people dig their heels in and they hold on to them like crazy. So what I'm saying, or where I'm going with this, is I see this big push for EV and trying to take away our, as an American people's, internal combustion engines. And California is a great example of that. There's people fleeing that state like crazy because you can't have a generator, a gas-powered lawnmower, weed eater. I mean, it's just absurd. I actually interview, and we've hired many people that have moved from California, great people that basically were, you know, had the gumption to say enough's enough, and I'm leaving this state that's trying to strangle us to death. So what I'm seeing, and I talk about this quite often, is we do quite a few repowers. And what I mean by that is when you are in the aviation world and your vehicle or your airplane in this instance gets so old, they either do an overhaul, engine replacement, but they repower the airframe. So essentially the chassis of the plane stays the same, and it could be a 70s model, meticulously maintained, and then it gets a new kind of quote-unquote heart transplant, if you will, and now we've got a new power plant in there. So, you know, A1 Custom Car Care, for years I've talked about this. I do this in my personal life. I do this with the kids' car, friends and family's car. Many of you out there have been on the receiving end of a repower. And there at my Sunset location, we've actually done several as of late. We had some late model, what I would consider bordering on big block Ford engine repowers. Because when my fleet or commercial customers come in, and they've outfitted a truck or a van or a crossover SUV, whatever it is, and they've put the racks on it, they've put the brush guard on it, they've done an expensive wrap, they've outfitted the vehicle for whatever business that they're in, they want to keep that, because once you pay for all that infrastructure of that vehicle, you really need to get as many miles out of it as possible. As well as even my normal, you know, just general run-of-the-mill folks, we've got some older, what I would consider older General Motors products in there that some folks are putting some very large investments in new transmissions, rebuilding some of the suspension, making sure they're in good shape. And I'm seeing people bring things in that I really haven't been working on the last several years because they're not wanting to dive into the expensive purchase of a new vehicle. So I believe this big push, honestly, of, you know, the EV and the hybrid market, a lot of people don't want to get into that technology, and they're investing in the vehicles that they have. And the more I go to the tax man and pay them for, you know, personal property tax, which is complete BS in my opinion, but I digress, they're electing to invest in what they have. And once we do a repower, you know, I'm going to stand behind that engine, transmission, transfer case, differential for a significant amount of mileage and years because we've done a repower on it. Now, just because I put an engine in it doesn't mean that your transmission, transfer case, differential's new. I mean, we can talk about that. I can make all that happen. But my point being is we want a good evaluation to see whether the vehicle is a candidate for a repower. Okay. And these that we've been doing lately, we've had some great candidates for repower. And if it's not, we'll have that discussion. And what really makes it not worth putting the money in? Well, if typically, and this is usually my deal breaker, if it's been wrecked and had a shoddy repair job done to it, or if the rust has got to a part of the body, chassis, frame that is non-repairable. So I don't want to put a repower in a very rusty, old, nasty vehicle. I want to make sure that when we repower something, that for the next 10, 15, 20 years, now don't warranty it that long. I typically give you a 3-year 36 or a 3-year 100,000 mile warranty, maybe a 3-year unlimited warranty, depending on what it is. But that peace of mind is those parts are mine. And if you have any problems, we're going to be here to take care of it. Sarah and I need to step into one more break before we wrap up the show. We're going to be right back after this.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right. Welcome back, Sarah and Dustin. We got just a few minutes. Sarah, have you driven by the corner of Fort and Sunshine in Springfield?
I have. Lately? Okay. So when is this official date opening?
I tell you what. We've had some amazing, really awesome code enforcement officers from Springfield.
Mm.
And I've had some that have given me some problems.
Yes.
I think we've worked through those. You know, I want to do everything up and up, but, you know, that's just a challenge that we had to overcome. So that's put me back, honestly, dealing with all that probably almost a month. We're getting close. I don't want to anger anybody in Springfield, but you know, we're trying. Like I said, we had a few of you guys that were amazing, and I greatly appreciate having somebody who basically kind of quality controls, looks over my shoulder because I'm not a builder contractor. We've had a great builder contractor architect team. They have been fantastic. As you can see, the product speaks for itself. The building is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So we've gotten almost through those hoops. We're down to, you know, one final inspection, then I can finally start doing some business in that beautiful shop.
Yay!
But what does that mean to everybody else? What do you think it means when a new shop opens?
It means that I get to update our commercial.
That's right. It does get to mean that, doesn't it?
Yes. So what does it look like, you open?
It's truly awesome, Sarah. I've been in there trying to get some of our infrastructure for, like, day-to-day work. You know, the hose reels done, the lifts. We work with a great company, Vehicles Unlimited, here in Springfield. Absolute rock stars. So I've tried to help with some of that, just kind of the logistics when we run into problems throughout this process. What can I do to remove whatever this stoppage is so we can keep going? But essentially, the building is done. The lifts are in. They're operational. They're working great. We're running the airlines right now, so we're in good shape to get started. We're going to be able to do tires, alignments, and ADOS calibrations at that facility, which is a big deal. That's Advanced Driver Assist Systems. So your adaptive cruise, lane keep assist, adaptive braking, etc., to make sure that your late model vehicles is something that we can make sure that they're safe when you or your loved ones go out in your new late model vehicles, as well as all your older ones. You know, we have a tremendous amount of folks that I've been caring for their vehicles now for over 20 years here in the Springfield area. So I greatly appreciate getting to know all of you out there that I run into in the shops. The company is a much bigger company than just me. The technicians and service advisors that we've got, I couldn't do it without them, nor do I want to. But long story short, that has been my essential baby for most of my career with A1 Custom Car Care. I managed that store for many, many years. It's a little four-bay shop that used to be behind the Come and Go gas station before they built the giant Come and Go across the street. As well as that store is going to keep opening. We are moving the offices into the new building, and you will see that much better accommodations for our customers to kind of be a part of the repairs. We're updating some of our digital ability to share the information with folks. That's gone over very, very well. We have set this shop up to be ready for the changes that are coming down the automotive industry. There's a lot of older shops that don't have anybody to pass on the business to and really are pulling out of the industry because it's changing so, so fast. The different strategy that A1 Custom Car Care has done is we have worked very hard to come from a custom exhaust only or undercar repair facility to a complete automotive repair facility. And, you know, we don't do body work. But as far as mechanically, we will take care of your vehicles and be on the cutting edge that when you have or need repair work, diagnostic work on your $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000 late model vehicles, we're able to take care of that. On top of our many, many years of already taking care of your older vehicles, making sure that you get 10, 20, 30, 40 years out of your vehicle that you've had forever. So we have an amazing skill set of folks, and this facility really is the culmination of all of that. So we're going to keep doing business in my old little four-bay shop. There's a lot of great infrastructure there. We've done a lot of service out of that building, and we're going to continue it. This is an expansion to add 7 more bays, so we'll have 11 bays total. So that's going to really allow us to get people in, get them out, and get them back on the road much quicker than we have in the past, sheerly because we have more ability for service. We're adding several new technicians that we've already hired. We have spent the time kind of getting to know them getting to know A1 Custom Car Care's procedures and how we take care of business, how we come to market, and why it is we do what we do. And I'm really proud of that. That's not an easy thing to do where you just turn people loose and, you know, hey, good luck, bro. You know, see what you can do on your repairs. Hey, this is what we do. This is why we do it. And either I or one of my absolute rock star folks are there to help them through that. So the technicians and service advisors that we're expanding to, they've already been working with us for well over a year at this point, most of them. And we are, you know, going to be able to come to our opening, to answer your question, Sarah, in probably the next 2 to 4 weeks.
Ooh, exciting.
So that's where we're at. I've got one other inspector to go through or you know, work with, essentially, make sure our site is in good shape. I absolutely love what's going on there. I'm very, very proud to have been a part of putting this facility together and making sure that in 10, 15 years, I'm not behind the eight ball, that we didn't think ahead and put this facility together to accommodate the changes and keeping up with the industry instead of, you know, being behind all the time.
Right. Well, that's really exciting.
Oh, yeah. Big, big deal. So not only have we expanded the bays, but we have built a training facility in there that
right.
I will be working with. We'll be bringing trainers in addition to myself. We've got some technicians and service advisors within our company that are more than capable of weighing in and helping me with some of this training. So when I tell you we're moving into or leaning into the change versus kind of sticking our head in the sand and running from it, that's what this facility is about. And I'm so excited to be able to take care of folks even at a better, higher level than we have in the past. You know, some of our other facilities have had the room and ability to adapt a little bit quicker than our little Fort and Sunshine store, but this really put us out there to be right on the corner. So people can get in, get taken care of, and I can ensure that to the best of our ability, when you need your vehicle to perform for whatever it is, maybe it's you want to go down to the river and go floating through the summer. Maybe it's you need to get to church, get to the doctor, run the grandkids or kids around. Whatever is your most important thing, because we all have that, right? We all have the things that are important to us that we have to or want to do. I want to make sure that when you tap the keys, that vehicle starts, it goes into gear, gets you from point A to point B with confidence, and that, God forbid, when and if you do have a problem, you know where it's going, you know who to call, and you know we take that just as serious and as important as you do. You think that's a little over the top, Sarah?
No, not at all. Well, I'm really excited for this new shop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the meantime, we have just a couple of minutes left, so tell me what else has been going on around the other shops.
You know, the other shops have really been a lot of what I would consider big, large repairs.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, don't get me wrong. I love doing a big, large repair. There's a lot of times I seek out vehicles that folks personally decided, hey, they don't want to make the investment or the trouble or whatever, and so I can buy disabled vehicles fairly cheap, rehab them, put them back on the road. I truly really love doing that, and I have folks and cars and customers that I've turned out that are 300,000-400,000 miles pretty easy. Now, maybe some of that was a repower, but they're driving them with confidence for many, many years later without a huge banknote over their head. Second thing that's been going on is the big deal with why we have some of those large repairs. And I had one recently. The truck had about 80,000 miles. Engine platform I'm very familiar with. It was a 5-4-3 valve. So if you have a 5-4-3 valve out there, I won't say that I'm probably one of the best around, but I'm doggone up there in the discussion for sure of knowing what's going on. So we had a tech, absolute rock star tech, Darren. He called and said, hey, I need you to, you know, kind of pick your brain on it. And this vehicle had a lot of parts changed out already that it all needed, but it had about 80,000 on it, and it has an internal mechanical issue with the engine. And it comes down to those engines typically don't have problems at 80,000, let alone all the parts that had already been changed on it. And they did a good job previously. My point is the root cause of this is because people don't change and maintain their fluids. And this problem came from lack of oil changes. I had a sticky valve. I had some valve train lash adjusters and cam followers that were just pitted and chewed up like crazy. And we had an intermittent mechanical compression issue on a certain cylinder. So long story short, what I'm telling you is if you have a large catastrophic repair, I've got you. We can take care of it. If I'm not doing it personally, one of the guys is taking care of it in spades. And then, you know, God forbid we have a problem, we're going to be there to take care of it. Secondly, if you will just maintain your vehicle, my business will slow down. I don't know how else to say it. If you will change your oil, some of your fluids, your vital fluids, no different than when you go to the doctor, you won't have these catastrophic failures, and I won't have this big repair work. So it just depends on what side of the road you're on. Either you want to prevent it, or you want to deal with it when it breaks. And either way, we got you taken care of. But my point is if you will follow some of our preventative maintenance processes during the life of the vehicle, you will be one of those folks that I talk about that's got 200,000-400,000 miles on it. And I've had you guys come in the shop. I had a gentleman who's a listener here at KSGF. He's like, I don't know if I can get 400,000 out of it like you do. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. But if you'll follow kind of our known proven process, you'll get many more miles out of it without those catastrophic failures than you would have otherwise. And I have proved it time and time again, as well as consult us or your trusted mechanic before you make a purchase. Because you could buy a problem that even I can't fix. You think that's
No, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
That is so true. We had that same thing happen when we were looking to purchase a new vehicle, and you guys were awesome helping us out with that.
Well, thank
you. I recommend that.
I appreciate that a bunch, Sarah. We take that seriously.
Yeah.
You know, I can't have you breaking down. I can't have Ryan breaking down. And if you are one of our customers that kind of has drank the Kool-Aid with us, if you will, and I mean that tongue in cheek, that, you know, if you'll give me a little bit of rope, yeah, we're going to spend a little money doing some maintenance on your vehicle, but I don't have the problems like a 80,000 mile catastrophic failure on an engine because it wasn't cared for correctly. And I'm not throwing stones at anybody out there. I'm hoping this story prevents, whether you do your own oil changes, service, maintenance, whatever, if you do it and you do it well, my hat's off to you. That's all I'm asking, is that if you'll think about it, you won't be broken down or have a crazy repair bill that you were not expecting.
All right. Well, believe it or not, but we are officially out of show.
Darn it.
I know. Time flies when you're having fun. If you're out there in radio land, you have a question or a comment, feel free to send it into our text line. That phone number is 417-447-5743. Once again, that is 417-447-5743. Or you can reach out to us on our social media at 1041KSGF. Dustin, I hope you have a good rest of your weekend.
You as well. Be safe out there.
Bye.